Greetings, welcome, bienvenidos, hola, aloha, ni hao, namaste, konnichiwa, bonjour, buongiorno, sawadee karup, guten tag, ciao, wi viva, cat bang, half a day, jai janendra, salam, shalom, peace, now, go vegan, peace how, go vegan. From the left coast of the unlabeled, genetically mutated McNugget pharmaceutical, kill, vivisection, prison, killitary, industrial, core, poor nation. In the cheese-covered, post-constitutional, bankster, bankrupt, corruptocracy, mocracy, criminocracy of the United States of Listeria, food-born in the NSA, NRA, USA, home of Uncle Sam Manella, where they sure do eat a lot of dead animal body parts, and the Wall Street-backed corporate diet of death, disease, and destruction is shoved down your throat. This is Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. And I'm having my concerns once again about celebrity vegans talking about veganism. You know, sometimes I think maybe they need a vegan manager or a vegan agent or a vegan writer. You know, refer people to them. You know, I mean, I had a lot to say about Ellen last week, and you know, when I saw Moby had an opinion piece in the new Rolling Stone, well, of course, I'm hopeful, but I also hold my breath. The headline is Opinion, Why I'm Vegan by Moby. Great, he used the vegan word right there. A victory, right? And he goes on we get to a point in his writing there where he says, quote, "But anyway, here's the epiphany. Sitting on the stairs, I thought, I love this cat. I would do anything to protect him and make him happy and keep him from harm. He has four legs and two eyes and an amazing brain and an incredibly rich emotional life. I would never in a trillion years think of hurting this cat. So why am I eating other animals who have four or two legs, two eyes, amazing brains, and rich emotional lives? And sitting on the stairs in suburban Connecticut with Tucker the cat, I became a vegetarian." And of course, I have problems with the word vegetarian now, meaning anything consuming animal products at all. I prefer to think maybe forward-thinking pre-vegan or advanced stage pre-vegan. But anyway, okay, so he says he became a vegetarian. That was in 1985, 29 years ago. And he says, "My reason for becoming a vegetarian was simple. I loved and love animals, and I don't want to be involved in anything that leads to or contributes to their suffering. At first, that led me to give up beef and chicken, then fish. If you've ever spent time with fish, you realize pretty quickly that they feel pain and are much happier not being hooked or speared or netted. Then I thought, I don't want to contribute to animal suffering, but the cows and chickens in commercial dairy and egg farms are pretty miserable. So why am I still eating milk and eggs? So in 1987, I gave up all animal products and became a vegan. Simply so that I could eat and live in accordance with my beliefs that animals have their own lives, that they are entitled to their own lives, and that contributing to animal suffering is something that I don't want to be a part of." So that was 27 years ago, he says, and he continues and says, He was kind of a militant vegan, and he wasn't getting invited to parties, and he wanted to get invited to those parties, so he decided to be not as militant. So in the article here, it says, "To be clear," I'm quoting, "to be clear, just because I'm a vegan, I'm not saying you should be a vegan," end quote. Moby, you were doing so well. But, that comment moved the needle on the Ellen HSUS doing vegan wrong meter to the yellow caution zone. Continuing to quote Moby, It would be ironic if I refused to force my will on animals, but was all too happy forcing my will on humans, end quote. Holy cow, Moby, there goes the Ellen HSUS doing vegan wrong meter. Oh, the needle is now in orange alert. We are not being alert vegans when we capitulate to the old everyone should have a choice rationalization for eating animals and their excretions. Because, why? Well, that's right. The animals don't have a choice, and their choice is most important, since they would be the ones to choose whether they want to be raped, mutilated, imprisoned, and killed for the momentary satisfaction of someone's taste buds. It's like it seems that Moby gets it, but then does he really get it if he doesn't have that sense of urgency to prevent the torture and to prevent the killing? Well, at least by saying, you know, these are the reasons I went vegan, and I hope you will too, right? Why not? You could go for that at least, right, Moby? You do hope that, right, Moby? So why not express that? Why give people an out, Moby? Why say to, quote, eat and live however seems best to you, Moby? Everything in our society indoctrinates people into wrongful eating. Everything, commercial on the, you know, every commercial on the television set, you know, the school lunch menu, propagandist doctors, you know, why not take this opportunity, Moby, the platform of Rolling Stone, to make the strongest possible statement on behalf of animals, the environment, and improved human health? So, you know, people should decide for themselves. They should have the choice to participate in atrocities, where Moby could be at the forefront, you know, of a new movement to, you know, let's say, why not, Moby, why not ban meat, dairy, fish, and eggs? Why not, right? I mean, we ban less harmful products such as plastic bags. Why not meat, dairy, fish, and eggs? Or at least ask people directly to go vegan. And then Moby says, quote, at the very least, I would strongly encourage you to avoid animal products produced on factory farms, as factory farms treat their animals horribly, and the meat and dairy that come from factory farms are filled with antibiotics and synthetic hormones and life-threatening bacteria, etc. Moby, you have pinged the needle into the alarming red zone on the Ellen HSUS doing vegan wrong meter. This is the out that you're giving people, Moby, is really very sad. You know, I mean, and I check this out. You know, there was an interview with Moby on Grit TV, and, you know, he wrote a book, Gristle, and it was co-written with Myeun Park, who, I mean, Myeun Park is one of the great traitors to animals. She's on the Global Animal Partnership. It's really quite amazing that in this interview, Moby says, well, you know, this is more about factory farming than animal products. And he also said, what's kept me vegan is the health aspect. But what's shocking to me is that Moby would say this is more about factory farming than animal products. You know, because would the family factory farms are any better? Conklin Farm, the dairy farm, right? The dairy farm that provided DiGiorno, all family farms. So the host, though, on this Grit TV interview, talking about Gristle, says, she says, all right, so what you're saying is go right ahead, have this hamburger, but here's this book that you need to read first. That's what the host says to Moby. Go right ahead. Have this hamburger, but here's the, you know, this book that you need to read first. And Moby responds saying, sort of. what kind of vegan message is this? You know, the family factory farm is agribusiness. The free roaming, you know, that's a fantasy in Moby's mind and Meun Park, and who was with the Humane Society of the United States and hosted Meatopia, you know, a kind of a happy festival for butchers. It's really quite amazing. You should look for Happy Meatopia on the internet, you know. But, you know, the free roaming fantasy, you know, could lead to more disease. It produces more methane. Moby tells people to get informed, yet at the time shows himself not to be so greatly informed. But then again, look at the company he keeps, HSUS, Meun Park, Global Animal Partnership. Moby says that a pound of soybeans requires 200 gallons of water, and a pound of beef requires 1,800 gallons to produce. Well, statistics from a study by the Stockholm International Water Institute estimate that it requires 8,500 gallons of precious water to produce a pound of beef. So Moby's off only by about 6,700 gallons. And Moby also says, quote, "I found out that commercial animal production was responsible for 18% of climate change, more than every car, bus, truck, boat, and plane combined. And, you know, I am so tired of ag gag, you know, people who are supposed to be animal advocates gagging ag facts." Now, Moby, perhaps influenced by the Humane Society of the United States and Meun Park and other groups who choose to ignore scientific evidence, you know, I'm sorry to say that, you know, along with HSUS and Moby, Farm Sanctuary, Mercy for Animals, the Farm Animal Rights Movement, Farm, have a strange, unfounded allegiance to a study in, you know, propaganda released by the United Nations Food and Agriculture Organization, or FAO, a pro-meat organization that actually promotes commercial industrial animal agriculture. Well, maybe I'll be able to finish up on this in a little bit. So coming up, we're going to talk about why you should support your local vegan restaurant. So we have... and we have Jing Wu of Loving Hut coming up, and Professor Gary Francione on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linton. Vegan Radio with Bob Linden, goveganradio.com, on Twitter at goveganradio. There are a couple of Bob Linden Facebook pages, as well as a Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden Facebook page. My email, bob@goveganradio.com. I just want to mention that, you know, if Moby is saying that people should, you know, be informed, you know, about making their decision about being vegan, and he says that animal agriculture produces 18%, flawed figures, 18% of all human-caused greenhouse gas emissions, and yet the scientists at the climate experts at the World Bank, World Watch Institute, examined that FAO, the UN report, and saw the flaws in it and estimate that animal agriculture causes at least 51% of all greenhouse gas emissions. So, I mean, at 18%, it's more than all transportation combined, which is like a really big deal, right? Cars, trucks, boats, planes, buses, you know. But at 51%, it's more than all other human activity that is not animal agriculture. So by Moby saying, well, you know, it's your choice if you want to go vegan, I'm not telling anybody to go vegan. I'm telling you, if you want to save the planet from climate change, you have to go vegan. That is the only solution. So Moby needs to get better friends than, you know, Meun Park and all of those groups. But anyway, you know, forgetting about them, I do want to say, I mean, oh, and by the way, we'll be talking about and why you should support your local vegan restaurant. My friend Mike Weinberg coming up shortly, and then we will have Jingwu Zhang coming up later in the program. He's the U.S. coordinator for Loving Hut Restaurants, and animal rights commentary with Professor Gary Francione on how to talk about being vegan to non-vegans. Moby, I hope you'll be listening. So many of us are really deeply saddened by the death of Virginia Handley, which just came as a real shock to us this week. Though she, I'm sure, would not want us to be as upset as we all are, but it's hard not to be, considering how many of us really loved Virginia. But she would be more concerned that the three dogs for which she served as guardian would find loving forever homes. So Virginia has left three dogs who do need homes, and you know, a neighbor is watching them right now. And if you're interested, I've posted on Facebook their pictures. You can email me bob@goveganradio.com if you're interested in helping. Virginia helped so many non-human and human animals for so many years, from way back with Cleveland Amory and the Fund for Animals to Animal Switchboard to Paw Pack. She's really another one of a kind. You know, she did a lot for me too personally, and you know, I'm honored to have been her friend. It's always you know, fun and informative to have her on my radio program, and I invite you to go to the website goveganradio.com, and you can search for guests and look for Virginia Handley. Just want to thank Virginia for standing up and speaking out for animals on this radio program, and speaking out, you know, amidst the animal abusers. You know, there's a video on YouTube that you can see, and basically in it, Virginia is saying, you know, I'm quoting, "I'm fighting with the hunters all the time. I'm lucky to make it to the parking lot sometimes, because you know, sometimes I'll be the only one there opposing them." And Virginia was really dedicated. She would go to the legislature in Sacramento and report on all of the bills affecting animals, and give us a report card on the legislators there and what they were doing. And again, it's just really so incredibly sad to lose such a good friend and somebody who was just so kind, you know? I mean, really, it's so strange that we give prizes, Nobel Prizes, to people who, you know, use drones and, you know, put whistleblowers away, but you know, I think next week, maybe if you were somebody who knew Virginia, next week we'll open up the phone lines and just have people talk about Virginia. It'll be 855-660-4261. Next week, well, you know, if you were a friend, Virginia, you can hear your tribute. We'll continue on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden, goveganradio.com. It's Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden at goveganradio.com. Now broadcasting for 13 years as heard on the Air America Radio Network and CBS and Clear Channel radio stations. And we are now nationally syndicated by the Genesis Communications Network. We're live Sundays from 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. Pacific Time. And what a radio career I have had, my gypsy life. I lived in San Diego for quite a while years back as program director of 98.1 KIFM And let's see if there are any radio station owners or general managers around. I should slip in my resume that as program director, I did bring the station to 4.812+, number one, men 25 to 54, number two, adults 25 to 54. So if you want to hire me as your next program director, it's Bob at GoVeganRadio.com. One of my good friends in San Diego, going back a long time, is Mike Weinberg, and he's talking to us today. And you know, Mike, you're really like a case study in you know, a life as a vegan, as far as I can see it. You know, your experiences, your family life, and where you are now. You know, your position that we should be supporting our local vegan restaurants. But how are you doing today, Mike?
Doing great, Bob. It's been a long time since we've actually talked. We've emailed, but it's great to hear you.
We email a lot, and I thank you for supporting this program. And if you'd like to be like the good Mike Weinberg, you can find the donate button at goveganradio.com also. So, but you have had an interesting life as a vegan. You know, and maybe, you know, as an example to others out there, you might fill us in on, you know, what's gone on in your past and how it affected your family life, friends, and, you know, your evolution as a vegan. And
sure. Yeah, it started back in June of 1997. I had a regular routine where a college buddy, John, and I would exchange dinners. He'd have my wife, Anita, and I over to his house, and it was his turn to come to our house. And he goes, by the way, I'm vegetarian now. So I go to Anita, I said, what are we going to feed this guy? Like, you know, he's from outer space or something. And he come over that night, and his skin was glowing, and he had been working out. He looked really buff. And he's telling me how he feels so healthy, and meat rots in your colon for 5 days. And I went, well, yeah, I'm into health. I'll look into this. So that night after he left, I went on the internet, and I came across this thing called vegan. I go, what's that? And after about an hour of reading that I didn't need animal products to be healthy, in fact, the opposite was true, I said, well, then why are all these animals suffering and dying? I'm going to be vegan. It was just like that.
Whoa.
So that's how my transformation happened.
That's a very quick transformation, and, you know, it just shows all the people say, oh, well, you know, people aren't going to go vegan overnight. Not everybody's going to go vegan. Well, if you put the information in front of people, at least let them consider it, and some will, just like you. I mean, that was like minutes for you, wasn't it?
Yeah, you know, but you know what's funny? I thought exactly like you did, and the next day I was clearing all the meat and stuff out of the refrigerator, and my wife comes home from work, and she goes, what are you doing? I said, well, I'm vegan now, so we got to get rid of this stuff. And she goes, what's that? And so it wasn't an easy transition for her, but we have a vegan household now, and a proud vegan daughter, and so
How's Rachel doing?
She's doing great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
She's doing great. In fact, I guess I can reveal it because she just revealed it today. We got a vegan baby on the way.
All right. That's what we need. My law is only vegans can procreate from now on. No more.
There you go.
You know,
I
no
like
more
that.
Offspring. You know, no more offspring from the audience of the Jerry Springer Show, please. It's all only vegans, right?
Yeah. So
we have a much lighter footprint on the world and really have to affect others. So, and how did Anita come along? Like, okay, so you made your transition in minutes. Your wife, Anita, you know.
Well, she agreed pretty soon to keep a vegan household just to keep peace in the household. She says, but you're the cook now, because she didn't want to have to read the labels and do all the research. So that works out well. I do the cooking and she does the cleaning and we're happy with that. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I thought she would go really quick because she's the real animal lover. Our animals are like people to her. Mm-hmm. And but, you know, people have some way of putting blinders on when it comes to food animals. So it took her a gradual transition to finally give up all animal products. But she's there now.
Yes, she is. That's great. So, and any other rocky points along the way with friends or family or?
Oh yeah, I mean that's the hard. You know, to be vegan's very easy on one level. Every time you sit down to eat, you have a choice, either to hurt an animal or not hurt an animal. And to me, it's a no-brainer. But when you spread the word and information to people, they don't want to hear it. They don't want to have to give up what they've been used to. And to me, it's always been kind of like this cognitive dissonance. Here I have these very kind, compassionate, loving people on one level, and yet they can sit down and eat animals without blinking an eye, and it's just kind of hard to balance those two thoughts in your head.
Mm-hmm. And did you always have a love for animals and sensitivity for them?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I used to be a hunter and a spear fisherman and everything because I thought that you needed animals. You know, I believe the big lie, you need animal protein to be healthy. And I guess that was the big shock for me when I found out that I didn't. I'm wondering why it didn't happen to me sooner. I wish it had happened to me sooner. Somebody had confronted me or given me a brochure or something years and years ago. I mean, it was just that it tinged on that intellectual idea that you needed these things to be healthy.
Right. And it turns out that the opposite is true, and we see we know from an article in the New York Times in 1907 and the Guardian in March of 2014 that animal protein causes cancer. The people who eat the most animal protein wind up with cancer and you know, suffer premature death. And this article that was just in the Guardian said that by having your source of protein as vegan, meaning beans, legumes, you practically wipe out these risks of cancer. And I invite people.
Absolutely. So just, you know, the compassion argument, the health argument, the environmental argument. It just, I'm still stunned that people just don't become vegan. It's just.
Yeah, yeah. Well, they do. We just have to put the information in front of them and let them know that, no, humane meat is not the option, organic isn't the option. It's, you know, we have to go vegan. And so now you've come to a point of activism where part of your cause is supporting the local vegan restaurant, not necessarily, you know, going with a bunch of friends where they're eating their rotting corpse and you have some choice that you can make there, but how has this thinking evolved? Because you know, sometimes vegans want to, you know, we don't want to make waves, so we'll go along. We'll say, okay, you all want to go to Chipotle, I guess they have an option there, or you know, you want to go to Subway, I think I can get what, I don't know, a piece of lettuce there or something, whatever.
Yeah, no, I mean it's there's a lot of social pressure to do that. In the early years, I was quite militant, and I got angry when people didn't automatically become vegan because I figured if I gave them the information, then of course they'd do it. But there was lots of resistance, and I'd refuse to sit at a table with anybody eating meat, which made for very awkward situations. And I gradually realized that that was just creating a lot of distress in my family and friends and me as well, and nobody was changing, so I kind of relaxed that hardline stance. And then we moved downtown San Diego, and we've got like 90 restaurants within walking distance of our condo. And so I made it my new goal to help veganize these restaurants by calling ahead and seeing if the chefs could prepare vegan options and whether they had vegan options on the menu. And, you know, that was fairly successful. I'd say 90% of the chefs were eager to do something special, something off the menu that would challenge them. But after about 7 years of doing that, I had some bad experiences and in non-vegan restaurants, and always in the back of my mind was
what were the bad experiences?
Well, just, you know, that it just dawned on me that here I'm, you know, trying to go along to get along, and I tell people about the vegan message while we're eating, and they go, "Oh yeah, that's nice. I really, you know, admire you for doing that." Yet they go on and continue to eat their steak, and it just got to be too much, and I said, you know what, this is it, I'm done with this. And then we had a couple of vegan restaurants that went out of business down, and so I said, you know, if vegans aren't eating in vegan restaurants, you know, vegan restaurant owners, they are really brave, I think, because restaurant business is so risky anyway that they're limiting their audience out of ethics. That at least vegans should be supporting them. So I created a calendar of all vegan restaurants down here, and I've been distributing that, and so far it's going well.
Oh, that's terrific. And you know, we should recognize that, you know, a lot of time I'm on the air here talking about, you know, what happens to animals and the environment and human health. And people finally say, well, okay, well, what do we eat? And we have to look at the efforts of people who, you know, really doing, you know, a heroic venture to open a vegan restaurant is, you know, I mean, that's rescue work to a degree.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, I mean, and, you know, they're very often on a tight budget and, you know, so they're depending upon us.
Yeah. Now there's been some backlash, even some vegans think I'm going to an extreme here, but, you know, now before I used to, not sit with people eating animals because I was trying to illustrate a point or make my point more strongly. And now it's basically for my peace of mind. And there's some good advantages to that. My friends say, oh, that's great. We don't have to listen. You give the vegan third degree anymore, where I say, oh, is there egg in those pasta? Or is there honey in that bread? And so when we go out to eat, everything's calm. Everybody's enjoying the food. We're supporting the vegan restaurants. Nobody's hurting animals in front of me. Mm-hmm. It's really been a great transition for me.
Yeah, you know, some of my concerns relate to cross contamination. You know, of, you know, the utensils, the knives, the cutting boards, going from, you know, some salmonella chicken to the vegetable. Whoops! I see we have to take a break. So stay with us, Mike Weinberg. We'll continue our discussion of supporting your local vegan restaurant. Also coming up, we will have Jingwu Zhang, who is the Loving Hut USA coordinator, and Professor Gary Francione on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden at goveganradio.com. It's Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden at GoVeganRadio.com, nationally syndicated by the Genesis Communications Network, on Twitter at GoVeganRadio, and we're talking to Mike Weinberg, a longtime friend from San Diego. I've had a gypsy radio life and spent a lot of time in San Diego, and Mike is kind of galvanizing a local, support your local vegan restaurant movement, and is it Vegan Diego that you're calling it, Mike, or what's...
Yeah, I'm calling it Vegan Diego, yes.
Vegan Diego, and you have a guide to local vegan-only restaurants, so no animal products, and how do people get a hold of it, and should this serve as perhaps, you know, a model for people elsewhere?
Well, I have a website, maxlearning.net, maxlearning.net, and they can click on the health section and scroll down. They'll find the Vegan Diego calendar. But I have a template that I'm offering to anybody in other cities that might want to do the same thing. Although, you know, we have 18 on the list right now, which is quite surprising, you know, because when I became vegan, I don't know if we had one or two vegan restaurants, so... The world's definitely moving in the right direction. Some
That's
cities
great.
Like Los Angeles, though, have like 70 on there, so that'd be really hard to coordinate that calendar. But happycow.net's another great resource when you're traveling and want to get a nice vegan restaurant.
Mm-hmm. Right. And I did mention that one of my concerns before the break is that cross-contamination, you know, of utensils and plates and cutting boards and all. Was that a concern of yours, too?
Oh, yeah, there's always a certain level of trust you have to have because unless they're cooking in front of you, you don't know what's going on behind the scenes. And, you know, they may be cooking on the same surface, the same cooking surface or a kitchen surface, cutting surface. Mm-hmm. Sometimes, you know, I've talked to other vegans, too. All of a sudden we'll find something in our meal that wasn't vegan, and we have to ask about it. And mm-hmm. so there's always that possibility as well.
Yeah. We're talking about avoiding the restaurants. I should mention we were talking about avoiding the restaurants that have meat, dairy, fish, and eggs for these reasons. And
absolutely. And, you know, the best thing, well, you know, a lot of people think, well, why not a vegetarian restaurant or veg-friendly? Well, I think, you know, you've preached for a long time, you know, that egg and dairy are worse for the animals than meat, and they, after a few years of suffering, they kill them anyway for meat, so no one gets out alive.
Mm-hmm. So if you're having cheese, you might as well have the hamburger or the steak, really.
Absolutely, yeah. The best thing for me is that I wouldn't go to a venue where people entertain themselves like by watching animals, like a dog fight or a cockfight or a bullfight. So why should I go to a place where people entertain themselves by actually eating animals? And yet it seems so normal to people to do that, and yet I can't do it anymore.
I'm with you.
You know.
I know what you mean. Some friends dragged me off to a Middle Eastern restaurant because, you know, there's supposedly some great dishes there. But, you know, when you're looking at the menu and you're seeing, you know, goat or, you know, what, it's just gross, you know. So
we were just at a farmer's market today, and there are all these, you know, these green beef and meats, and they were offering rabbit and other kinds of things that you wouldn't normally think about eating. And I'm thinking, but people don't want to eat rabbits, those cute little bunnies, and yet people are buying them. So
right. Well, well, it's all so well hidden, you know, so that's the way it seems to go. So it's Vegan Diego. And did you say 18 restaurants now in San Diego?
Yeah, we have 18. Actually, we have two native foods that are opening up. They're really veggie grill and native foods are just burgeoning throughout the country. And so mm-hmm. we've got two native foods on the way.
You have Loving Hut. Yeah.
Veggie grills. We've got numerous small entrepreneur ones. Those are the ones I really want to support because they don't have the wherewithal of a chain restaurant.
Right. And Loving Hut really isn't a chain, even though it's, you know, the name is Loving Hut nationally and internationally. It's really, you know, individual people who really care. You know, these are the people who go out and rescue people in floods and, you know, natural disasters, and they're looking at Loving Hut as again a form of rescue. And we're going to have Jingwu Zhang coming up on the program, who is the U.S. coordinator for Loving Hut, in just a few minutes. Mike Weinberg, thanks for being with us today.
Thank you, Bob. You still got the best vegan radio show in the world.
Thank you so much. The website, maxlearning.net. Look at the health section, Vegan Diego. Thanks for your activism, Mike Weinberg.
You're welcome, Bob. You too.
We'll continue on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. GoVeganRadio.com. Greetings again. Welcome to the second hour of Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. Yes, since we've become nationally syndicated by the Genesis Communications Network, we have expanded to 2 hours every week. We're live from 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. Pacific time on Sundays. Programs archived at GoVeganRadio.com, where you can click donate to support the radio program. And there are hundreds of free archives on the site. And today it's support your local vegan restaurant. And it was great talking to my old friend Mike Weinberg in San Diego about supporting vegan restaurants as opposed to, you know, and you can go to Direct Action everywhere for information about the campaign against Chipotle, which has become the third largest restaurant chain, selling the public on the myth that meat, so-called meat, can be humane. And so that's very disappointing. So I would say, you know, take your dollars and give them to your vegan restaurant, not to Chipotle and its deceptive marketing campaign. A great restaurant in the San Francisco Bay Area and the San Jose area is Vegetarian House, 520 East Santa Clara Street. It is 100% vegan, organic, no GMOs, fantastic international menu, raw options, desserts, and Vegetarian House is available for catering in the Bay Area to make your next business or social event really special, whether it's a conference or a wedding or 10 people or 1,000. Check out Vegetarian House for catering. The website is vegetarianhouse.us. It's Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden, and now I'd like to welcome another good friend to the program, Jingwu Zhang, who is the U.S. coordinator for Loving Hut Vegan Restaurants. And how are you today, Jingwu?
Hey, great, Bob.
Thanks for being with us. So, you know, when I tell people support your local vegan restaurant, very often that means Loving Hut, because there are hundreds worldwide, and it's not really a chain, though, right? Because it's individual caring people. It's not really a chain. How did Loving Hut come to be?
Well, you know, just as you mentioned, Loving Hut is not a chain, but it's a family of vegan restaurants. Each restaurant is operated individually by the compassionate people. They really, they are vegans themselves. The very first Loving Hut in the world opened its door in Taiwan on April 18th, 2008. That's almost 6 years ago. In the same year, in July, that the first Loving Hut opened in USA, in Milpitas, California, is also in the Bay Area. Since then, over 200 restaurants have been established in the last 5 years. Supreme Master Ching Hai created the concept of Loving Hut Vegan Restaurant. In the vegan community, most people probably know Supreme Master Ching Hai from her book, From Crisis to Peace, Organic Vegan Way is the Answer. So Supreme Master Ching Hai is the spiritual teacher, a renowned artist, and humanitarian. She cares deeply about the welfare of people and animals, as well as the planet Earth. So she created the Loving Hut Vegan Restaurant chain in order to promote the healthy, ecological, and compassionate vegan lifestyle. So Loving Hut envisions a world where all beings can coexist in peace, love and harmony with each other and on the planet. So Supreme Master Ching Hai often reminds her students that the most important thing in this world, regardless of our mission, is to love one another. So it's not surprising to us. So the vegan restaurant, the chain, is named as Loving Hut. So although Supreme Master Ching Hai provides a vision for Loving Hut, she neither seeks nor accepts any proceeds, nor any other forms of compensation from Loving Hut operators. So in fact, Supreme Master Ching Hai never takes donation from her disciples. So she supports herself from her artistic creations and uses her own savings to help her disciples in the world. So I just give you the founder of the Loving Hut. And so each Loving Hut is operated individually or by a group of people. So it's not a typical franchise like McDonald's and or other franchises with a typical format everyone has to follow. So each Loving Hut has its own menu and different service style.
So I must say, I know of the work of Supreme Master Ching Hai and how her followers always respond to disasters around the world, whether, you know, it's flooding or fires or you know, in Haiti with the earthquake, that her followers go there and feed the people vegan meals. And I think that the Loving Hut is like a rescue effort also, isn't it? It's a rescue effort to save the planet. Like you say, she's very aware of the impact of meat, the consumption and production of meat, dairy, fish, and eggs on the environment. And Loving Hut is rescue work, rescuing the planet and rescuing people's health too.
Exactly. So we as you mentioned, when we created Loving Heart back in 2008, the planet was at a very critical condition because of global warming. The plant-based diet or the vegan diet is the most effective way to stop global warming. So that's one of the reasons that Loving Heart was created. Now, of course, not the main reason is the love behind it, love behind the for the animals and compassionate, peaceful living among all human beings. So that's the motivation for creating Loving Heart.
Right. Now, people, I mean, it's all beautiful in what you say, but I think people are going to say, well, how is the food, huh?
Yeah, you know, so far, we have a lot of experience in preparation of food, and we know we have to, because there's a strong demand for vegan food, we cannot wait for a decade to develop the formulas. And so so each Loving Heart has their own chef. They created their own food. So as long as it's vegan, and since 2010, we also began to use non-GMO products. So as long as non-GMO, and we encourage people to use as much organic ingredients as possible, so that, you know, people, the chefs can create their own dishes, so satisfy the local demand. The food, the response has been overwhelming. You know, that's why our restaurant has been really supported by vegans and non-vegans alike.
Mm-hmm. Everybody loves the food at Loving Heart, and I think that's reflected in that, you know, the restaurant business is you know, really kind of shaky sometimes, and, you know, a lot of restaurants don't make it, but it seems like you're having a pretty good success rate.
Oh, yeah, definitely. You know, according to a study by Ohio University, I think that's a very good study. It says 25% of restaurants fails in the first year, and 60% of them fail within 3 years. You know, Loving Heart, I'll give you a concrete example. In the USA, we have opened 48 Loving Heart restaurants, and we only have five who cannot make it because different reasons, sometimes the location. So our success rate is close to 90% in 5 years. So this is just amazing compared with the regular restaurant business. I think mm-hmm. this is a sign that more and more people are becoming vegan. They are very supportive to our operation. And of course, you know, all the operators of Loving Heart also works very hard to keep the restaurant
going. Well, they're very dedicated to the cause. I mean, this means, you know, this comes from the heart, actually. And so it's if people around the U.S. want to find a Loving Heart near them, they can go to lovinghut.us?
Yes, certainly. Lovinghut.us, the website, leads to all the Loving Heart locations. You can select, there are 15 states have a Loving Heart, totally 43 of Loving Heart. And each Loving Heart has their unique menu. Once you log on to website, you can see the menu of the Loving Heart you are visiting.
It's great food. I mean, I love Loving Heart myself. And Loving Heart is global, too. I mean, where might people around the world, you know, outside of the U.S. find Loving Heart restaurants?
Oh, okay. They can find the Loving Heart at lovingheart.com, where you have list of different countries. As I mentioned, there are about 200 restaurants over the world. Asia has 120 Loving Heart. So with Taiwan, South Korea, Indonesia, Mongolia, and Thailand, Hong Kong, each having multiple locations. Europe has about 30 Loving Heart distributed in 10 countries, including UK, Spain, Germany, Czech Republic, and Austria, France, Poland, Slovenia, and Belgium, and Russia also. In Austria, there is also a Loving Heart Inn where the guests can stay and enjoy delicious food in a relaxing environment.
Hmm, that's wonderful. It's great.
Yeah, there are also several loving huts in Australia, South America, and Central America.
That's so great. Did you just open up a new one? Were you involved with a new one in the Bay Area?
Oh, yes, yes. So last year, through the last 9 months, USA added 3 new loving huts. So one in Brooklyn, New York, one in Sandy Spring, Georgia, that's near Atlanta. And we also had a new one in Santa Clara, in the Westfield shopping mall. This is a flagship shopping mall for Westfield. They renovated the dining terrace. We were invited to be at the food court. And
that's
it
great.
Was very exciting. Yes,
okay, exciting. We're out of time, but yes, great to see Loving Hut in the food court at malls. Thank you, Jingwu Zhang, for all that you do. And Loving Hut, it's lovinghut.us. Thanks for being with us today.
Thank you, Bob.
Go to Loving Hut. The food is great. Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden, goveganradio.com, on Twitter, at Go Vegan Radio. There are 2 Bob Linden Facebook pages, and there is a Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden Facebook page. So we're talking today about how you should support your local vegan restaurant. And really, people who open vegan restaurants are the heroes of the community. You know, they're doing what needs to be done to save the world and your health and the animals. So why would we go to, you know, some chain so-called restaurant, you know, that serves decomposing body parts and give that chain your money when you really need to support your local vegan restaurant? And, you know, some people are telling me, well, but we don't have a restaurant near us where we are in Tennessee or wherever. Well, then you can have your vegan food delivered right to your door, wherever you are in the USA. And, you know, that should be convenient enough, okay? No vegan restaurant nearby. Your front door is nearby, and you can have your meals delivered by Greenlight Meals. You can go to the website, greenlightmeals.com. That's green, L-I-T-E, meals.com. I mean, for all the reasons we talk about going vegan, you know, vegan food is really delicious, too. If you go look at the Loving Hut menus there, I mean, you're probably on the way to the Loving Hut near you now. But, you know, if you don't have that option, you can have breakfast choices sent to you, like tofu scramble and breakfast burritos, banana walnut pancakes, Cinnabon oatmeal, and more. And, you know, entrees that include chipotle falafel with sweet potato burrito. You know, this chipotle, not the chipotle that, you know, where you shouldn't go spend your money. Baked bean and veggie chili, tofu fritters with hot peppers and relish and root vegetable soup, lentil soup, stuffed peppers, even vegan barbecue chicken, beefless stew, and buffalo cauliflower, and a lot more. Snacks from jerky to trail mix and peanut butter cups, and lots for the kids too. Chickpea tenders and dipping sauce, mac and trees. You can have smoothies delivered. I mean, so, and to help you reach your goals with health and fitness, weight loss, consultation is available with Melissa Bray, who's a certified personal trainer and nutritionist. So definitely check it out. It's greenlightmeals.com, green, L-I-T-E, meals.com. There's a meal plan that's right for you, and the food will be delivered right to your door. We have some late breaking news about elephants rampaging at the circus in St. Louis. Apparently, this happened last night at the Shriner Circus. And, you know, whenever I'm, you know, I take my megaphone out to Ringling Brothers or another circus, I'm always hoping that, you know, that's not the night that your child gets trampled by an elephant or gets tuberculosis from an elephant. And last night, you know, three elephants, you know, ran from the Shriners Circus. And my sources tell me it's believed that they are rented elephants from Carson and Barnes for elephant rides and performances for the Shriners. And in fact, when they went running, they still had their saddles on. So very lucky that there weren't children on the elephants when they took off. And apparently the elephant rides are a big moneymaker for the Shriners. So somehow, whatever the reason was, they spooked, you know, they got spooked. They ran for the exit. They were loose for 45 minutes. They were damaging cars in the parking lot. And I'm told by my source, it's believed that the elephant trainer for the Shriner Circus is Chip Arthur, who used to be with Circus Vargas, which we protested in Orange County for years. We were pelted with rocks by the circus workers there when we protested. That's how violent they are. Well, certainly, they were violent to the elephants because the only way to train an elephant is with a bullhook, which is considered a deadly weapon by the Anaheim Police Department, a big wooden stick with a metal hook on the end of it. Circus Vargas has since given up animals, so actually, we recommend you go to Circus Vargas. And again, it's thought that maybe these elephants were suffering severe beatings for their behavior last night. So we'll update you next week on this. It's Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden, Professor Gary Francione, coming up. Radio with Bob Linden at goveganradio.com, nationally syndicated by the Genesis Communications Network. On Twitter at Go Vegan Radio, there are two Bob Linden Facebook pages and a Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden Facebook page also. And so now it is time for Animal Rights Commentary with Professor Gary Francione, the first academic to teach animal rights theory in an American law school, and his website is abolitionistapproach.com. His latest book is Eat Like You Care. How are you today, Professor Francione?
I'm absolutely fine, Bob, and how are you?
Doing well, doing well. I know that you you want to talk about going vegan, how you talk about going vegan to non-vegans, and I was a little disappointed in some of what Moby had to say in the Rolling Stone, which I talked about.
Oh yes. That was actually horrifying. You know, did you discuss it earlier on the program?
Yeah, I did. But you know, if you want to chime in, I have to say one of my pet peeves is that people keep quoting the United Nations Food and Agriculture Organization estimate of 18%. That's the figure. It says animal agriculture. You know, animal agriculture is responsible for 18% of all greenhouse gas emissions. And the FAO is like a pro-factory farm organization, pro-meat organization, and World Watch Institute scientists, climate experts, have looked at that UN report, the FAO report, and they say, no, it's more like 51%. And they show why the UN report is flawed. So why not give the animals the benefit of the doubt with these experts who say at least 51% of greenhouse gas emissions are caused caused by animal agriculture instead of 18%, which is still more than all transportation combined. But, you know, 51% is more than all other animal, you know, all other human activity combined other than animal agriculture. But I didn't like that Moby gave people an out and said, well, you know, if you're not going to be vegan, at least don't buy animal products from factory farms, which is always upsetting
to me. Look, he articulated a position that is very common amongst a lot of animal advocates and a lot of vegans. This notion that, well, veganism is right for me, but I'm not saying it's right for everybody. Now, he did actually make the additional statement that he didn't feel that he could force his will on animals, so therefore he shouldn't force his will on other humans. But that's like saying, well, you know, I think slavery is wrong, and I shouldn't force my will onto slaves. And on the other hand, I'm not going to force my will onto slave owners and suggest or argue with them or make it clear that they can't morally justify slavery. I mean, it was in many ways a pretty silly statement, but it reflects the sort of moral relativism that you encounter, that one encounters amongst a lot of animal advocates. This idea that, well, you know, it's a matter of opinion. I had an online discussion with the people from Animals Australia a few months ago, and they were taking the position, well, we can't dictate to people what they can do. Well, let me tell you something. Well, it's not a question of dictating. It's a question of taking a moral position. And if we can't take a moral position that animal exploitation is morally wrong, I don't know what the hell we're doing.
And the thing is,
anyway,
I do want to dictate it, though. You know what I mean? It's like, we can ban plastic bags. Why not ban something that's even, you know, worse than plastic bags? If we, you know, in my thinking, you know,
I mean, look, the reality is, you know, governmental bans and banning things and making things illegal is a prescription for disaster unless there's a fairly widespread support for the prohibition in terms of, you know, people thinking as a moral matter it's a good thing to ban. And I think one day we will get to that point, Bob, where people will say, yes, you know, there ought to be bans are for the stragglers who don't want to go along with what is thought to be the morally good, solid way of proceeding. Bans are, you know, if you try to impose a ban right now on animal exploitation, it'd probably be the quickest way you'd be the shortest route to an uprising in a matter of nanoseconds, because most people consume animal products and they want to continue to do so, and they want to get them cheaply. So I think, you know, one of the things that I think is really important, I hope when we have this conference that you've now enticed us all with, this idea that next March that there'll be a vegan conference, that we won't have to sit and listen to hours and hours and hours and hours of corporate charities droning on about the joys of happy exploitation, as is currently the case with the Animal Rights Conference that is held in D.C. and in California, and that we'll have a different approach to things next year. And that's one of the things that I think we need to talk about as a movement is moral realism. The idea that, do we think that this is morally wrong or not? If I think it's morally wrong for people to eat meat and cheese and eggs and butter and wear wool and leather and silk and stuff, then we ought to be taking, if that's what we think the moral baseline is, we ought to be articulating it. It doesn't mean we force people. It doesn't mean we get violent with people. It means we make it clear as a movement. This is a social justice issue. This is a matter of justice. It's not a matter of opinion. It's not a matter of lifestyle. It's not a question of what sort of music you like or what sort of art you like. It's a question of what's morally right and what's morally wrong. And if we cannot take the position that it's morally wrong to exploit animals, and that that's our moral baseline, and that we believe that is a morally true proposition, then I don't know what we're doing. I don't understand what the movement is about. It's like saying, well, we're a movement for civil rights, but we think racism, you know, you want to be a racist, you know, we really can't say whether racism is right or wrong in an objective way. It's up to the individual. Well, if the civil rights movement took that position, we would still have segregated toilets and water fountains. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, you know, a social movement for justice, a social justice movement, has to be clear as to what the message is. And that message is, that veganism's got to be the moral baseline. If animals matter morally, if they are not things, we don't have a choice. We have to stop eating them, wearing them, using them, period. End of story. It's that simple.
Right, I'm looking for the sense of urgency from people, you know, behind that. You know what I mean? It's like, oh, yeah, I understand. You know, it's your choice. I hope you make the best choice. Well, where's your sense of urgency in convincing people? My first guest on the show, Mike Weinberg, went vegan within minutes of learning about, you know, the issues. It can happen, but people have to get the information in front of them.
It's happening all the time. This is why we have got to teach people to be effective vegan advocates. Right now, we don't really, you know, one of the reasons why Anna Charlton and I decided to write Eat Like You Care was the book was intended for people who cared about animals but who weren't vegans. We wanted to persuade them that they needed to be vegans, and we were getting a good reaction from those people. But we also wrote it for people who are already vegans, what we wanted to do was give them a short structure to learn, so that when they go out and they talk to their friends, they have answers to the common questions. There's a limited number, and they repeat themselves again and again. I think we have 30 or 31 of the common objections. I don't know, several dozen, that's what we were trying to do, was to sort of train people. How do you talk to non-vegans? How do you go out there and educate? And actually, that's what I wanted to talk about tonight. There's a podcast that we have at abolitionistapproach.com. And we're going to start the podcast up again shortly. Our podcast number 19, Talking with Non-Vegans About Veganism, Five Principles. And I just wanted to review those really quickly. When you're talking to people who are not vegan, keep these five things in mind. Number one, people are good at heart. You know, if you start off thinking people are horrible, you hate people, if you're a misanthropic, you're not going to have a good conversation. If you're heavy into the human extinction movement or whatever, if you don't like people, that's going to come across. And if you don't think people are fundamentally moral beings or people who have an interest in morality, then don't waste your time. Because it's, you know, in order to have a conversation in which you try to sort of ignite the spark of moral concern that somebody has, you've got to believe that that spark exists in that person, and that person is essentially somebody who's interested in morality, and what you're there to do is draw that out of the person. So start off, people are good at heart. Number two, people are not stupid. You know, I get this all the time from animal advocates. They say, oh, we can't explain veganism to people because they won't understand it. You know, it's as if it's such an elitist crock of nonsense that we are the anointed ones and that we understand it, but they will never understand it. Wrong. People are not stupid. They can understand this, and they will understand it if you explain it in a coherent way, in an accessible way. So, number one, people are good at heart. Number two, people are not stupid. Don't get defensive. Respond, don't react. This is extremely important. People lose their temper all the time. I see this happen again and again and again with animal advocates. They're trying to discuss veganism with somebody, and that person says something sarcastic or asks an incredibly dumb question. Let me tell you something. The more stupid the question you get, it is the more likely it is that that person is engaged and doesn't really know, and is feeling frustrated and
but,
is coming
but,
out.
But
with
wouldn't the world be overcome with cows and pigs and chickens if we didn't eat them?
Yes, exactly. Or wasn't Hitler? I mean, you know, look. If somebody says to me, "Wasn't Hitler a vegetarian?" The answer is no. He wasn't a vegetarian. He certainly wasn't a vegan. So I don't care if he was a vegetarian. But when somebody gives you the Hitler question or plants, what about plants? It tends to make people very upset, and they say, oh, well, the person's not taking me seriously. No, actually, that's an indication that the person doesn't have anything better to say, but is still engaging you and is feeling frustrated, and that's a person that you could, that, you know, that don't write those people off. You can educate them. So, but whatever question the person asks, don't get angry and don't get defensive. respond to the person. Don't react. Respond, don't react. The fourth principle, don't get frustrated.
Wait, before we get to principle four, we must take a break. So we'll have four and five coming up. And, yeah, animals would not overtake the planet because, well, they're artificially inseminated and mass-produced. So that's part of it. It's Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. We'll continue with Professor Gary Francione. GoVeganRadio.com. GoVeganRadio.com on Twitter at GoVeganRadio. If you missed any of our show, the program is archived at GoVeganRadio.com. Earlier we talked about reasons to support your local vegan restaurants, and I should mention that Viva La Vegan in Rancho Cucamonga has a new Mexican cafe, so you can check that out. And the other 8,000 vegan items for sale at that location. And there's a newly opened Viva La Vegan in Santa Monica on Ocean Park and 28th, VivaLaVeganGrocery.com. And we're talking to Professor Gary Francione, advice to give vegans on how to talk about going vegan with non-vegans. And I hope Moby is listening today, because he, I don't know, what he wrote in Rolling Stone was kind of strange. He kind of went from, he was frustrated from yelling at his friends about being vegan, so then he didn't get invited to parties, to, well, it's more about factory farming than animal products, and that's not really the place to go. So in our countdown, Professor Francione is now up to number four.
Do not get frustrated. Education is hard work. It's very important when we're educating people. Remember something. We've had thousands and thousands of years of speciesism and exploitation and human oppression of non-humans, and of thinking that non-humans are inferior, either spiritually or naturally or some combination of the two. And so we're trying to shift a paradigm in the context of deeply embedded beliefs. And that's not easy to do. And
what do you mean? What my mother did was wrong? My mother would feed me wrong?
Bob, you know, you raise that, and that's an excellent point to focus on for a second. And that is, when you are talking with somebody about going vegan, and you're talking about why animal exploitation is wrong, what they may be hearing is, my God, my grandmother was a horrible person for having us over for Thanksgiving dinner. And this is what, you know, it's hard to do this sort of education, because the prejudice that we're addressing, speciesism, is an integral part of, and has been an integral part of not only society, but of the lives of most people. And many of us have very fond memories of loved ones, family and friends, in which the exploitation of animals was an integral part. So we've got to understand that it's not something that we should address in a simplistic way, or in a way that is not mindful of that sort of those deep social roots. And I think that's really, really important. So I'm glad you raised that. But, you know, that's part of principle four. Education is hard work, because you're fighting. You're not just having an abstract discussion about something. You're talking about a social practice that is deeply embedded and that has been part of the lives of most people, and that shapes our perceptions of the world.
So,
but my mother would not want me. My mother would not want me to get cancer either. So if she learned about this, she would be feeding me vegan, right? I mean,
that's exactly right. And you're also dealing with the propaganda we've all been fed, figuratively, in terms of the idea that animal products are healthy for us, which we all know is not only not true, but the opposite is true. But you're fighting that as well. So, you know, education is hard work. Don't get frustrated. Stay engaged. Always remember, somebody asks you a question, it doesn't matter whether it's the 80 millionth time that person's asked you the question, or not that person, but that you've been asked that question. You always have to be engaged with that individual in front of you, or else you're going to lose that person. Always respond as if it was the first time someone's asked you the question. Get totally involved with that person. Answer the question. And again, going back to principle three, never get frustrated. And I'm sorry, never get defensive.
Nobody ever asked me how I get my protein before. You're right. Nobody has ever asked that.
Principle five, learn the basics. You first have to be a student before you become a teacher. This is, I think, an extremely important point. Many people in the animal movement, they say, I can't be bothered to read books. I can't be bothered to read this. They can't be bothered to learn. They want to change the world, but they can't take the time to try to learn. And we can continue this next week, Bob, and we can talk about our conference.
Yes, we will. We'll continue with Professor Gary Francione next week. If you missed any of the broadcast, archives are at goveganradio.com. Thanks for listening. Go vegan.